Sanchez versus Holder, Ms. Sharma Crawford.
May it please the court, counsel. My name is Michael Sharma Crawford. I'm here for Margarita Reyes Sanchez. This is an issue about one of the elements of a form of relief known as cancellation of removal. Cancellation of removal exists in this particular instance to assist persons who are undocumented in the United States, who have lived here for a great period of time, who have investment in society, who have qualifying relatives, a spouse, a parent, or a child, who's either a resident or a citizen, to present their case before the court and see if they merit relief from removal based on a balance of the equities they can demonstrate against any of the ills that they demonstrate. The particular element at play here is continuous physical presence. When you look at the statute for continuous physical presence, it only tells you that continuous physical presence can be broken in a temporal sense, in that you can be gone more than 180 days in total amongst that 10-year period, or more than 90 days in one particular event that you've left the United States. Statutorily, that breaks continuous physical presence. In two decisions by the board, Romales and Aviles Nava, they look at other processional issues, process issues that may break your physical presence. In Romales, they agree that the execution of a deportation order, that you have somehow during that 10 years been apprehended and placed in a removal proceeding, whether it is the formalized judicial process or the informalized expedited removal at the border. But
your complaint, I think, is just about the adequacy of the notice?
No, Your Honor.
You say procedural safeguards.
I do. And to that degree...
What are the procedural safeguards you want?
Well, I think this is a characteristic of arguments where we get lost in the plethora of terms of art in immigration law, where you talk about removal, you talk about it, applicant
permission. I'm happy to not discuss any of that technical stuff. I just thought your objection was that the notice of rights was misleading or insufficient. Is there something else?
I don't think it is insufficient.
Well, what's your gripe, right? They gave him this. They gave her this notice, and what more should they have to, what is it you're
If you look at Reyes Velasquez out of the Eighth Circuit, you have an individual.
I want to look at another case. I want to know what your argument is.
I'm trying to examine by factual.
You don't have to look at another case to tell me what your argument is.
My argument is that the simple piece of paper, that the ability of the government to go, oh, we have that piece of paper.
Are you talking about the notice?
Yes, Your Honor.
Okay, so you're saying it's inadequate.
I think that is demonstrative of a voluntary return, but it is inadequate to advise that person of
So that's your argument. It's
yes.
not.
It is inadequate to advise her of the protections that
so
she was available.
What should it say?
I don't think the notice is the issue. I think the process is the issue.
Now you've lost me. The notice isn't. You just said the notice is inadequate. Now you tell me the notice isn't the issue.
No, Your Honor. I think the problem here is that the courts have said that you have to go through these procedures.
The courts have said. Are you complaining about what this notice says or doesn't say, or do you have some other complaint?
I think that to say that if the government produces that piece of paper, that you can't your time in the United States is broken, doesn't spread evenly across the playing field. It's still a voluntary return.
So you're complaining about the notice, aren't you?
No, Your Honor. I don't believe I'm complaining about if I'm misunderstanding the court. When you say I'm complaining about the notice.
I have no idea what your argument is now. I've completely lost it. I thought your argument was that the notice didn't warn her about, you know, her law about her potential loss of cancellation rights, maybe of other rights.
And I agree that it does. In that sense, Your Honor is correct. The notice just says, do you want to go to court or not? And her response is, no, I just want to go home. And those notices are typically given in a fashion to say, do you want to just go home? Sign here. And then they leave. And there is no...
Right, so the notice is inadequate.
That,
you're
that,
saying what happened to her was insufficient to break her tenure, her presence in the United States.
Yes, because I think
and that's because under the Eighth Circuit's analysis, there has to be an express threat of deportation or removal, and this notice didn't include an express threat of deportation or removal.
And yes, Your Honor, and deportation and removal are terms of art, and they then bring into play those processes that Romales and Navas-Olive Avila talk about, an application for admission, which aren't at play here. This is a chaotic process at the border. Here is a truckload of people. Everybody who wants to leave now and go home to your parents, sign this piece of paper. And that's it. And if the government gets to produce the piece of paper, then
said,
we lose.
If the notice said that if you don't request a hearing, you'll be deemed deported or deemed removed, would that do the trick?
I think the problem becomes is in that moment you don't understand what that relevance is.
Well, all right, so add something. You'll be deemed deported, and as a result, should you ever come back to the United States, you wouldn't be allowed to argue for cancellation of removal.
Yeah, or as a result, your continuous presence in the United States is deemed broken, should you...
I think those would help. And the part of the problem...
Help, look.
I think it would... Yes, Your Honor, it would be sufficient in that regard. The problem is she was eligible for cancellation of removal in 2001, but she had no way to know that. She'd been in the United States since 1988. In 2001, she had 13 years of continuous physical presence.
Of course, you're not suggesting the border officials had any reason to know that either.
And that's part of the problem. That's part of the problem is that if she had been put in removal proceedings, then she would have had the ability to explore that because the immigration judge, pursuant to the code, would have had to tell her all her relief. Instead, it's a bargain of jail time or go. As I was trying to say in Reyes Velasquez, the facts are that gentleman spent 2 weeks in jail, but they couldn't produce that piece of paper. So the Eighth Circuit said, well, then it's insufficient notice. So she doesn't spend any time in jail, but they can produce the piece of paper. It seems to be an imbalance in the process. You can't rely on to know what is necessary to break continuous physical presence in this concept of a voluntary return. Romales says an order of deportation does it. Aviles says that you have to have this process, which is the application for admission and its refusal, or your formal withdrawal of that application for admission. Here, the voluntary return process is either by truckload or by person, depending on which border you're at. And if the government can produce the piece of paper, then it's broken. If they can't produce the piece of paper, but you spent 3 weeks in jail and we can show that, then it's not broken. It becomes chaos.
I understand that. I agree with you that it's chaotic. It's hard for me to agree that this litigant didn't realize that when she agreed to return to the country to her country as soon as possible that she thought somehow that wasn't breaking her continuous presence in the United States. I mean the logical conclusion would be if I'm not in the United States for whatever reason. My continuous presence there is broken.
But and I understand the court's position. However, would not the defendant, the respondent in Reyes Velasquez, who spends 2 weeks in jail, have the same conclusion but arrive at a different result?
Two weeks in jail here in the United States?
Yes. The facts in Reyes Velasquez out of the Eighth Circuit, where they held that since they couldn't produce that piece of paper, they couldn't show that they had received some warning, it was insufficient, but he spends 2 weeks in jail. Here we don't spend 2 weeks in jail, but we have a piece of paper. 2 weeks in jail in the United States doesn't tell you that you're not welcome and that any time you're here doesn't count?
You may not be welcome, but you're within the border.
So was she.
I understood she got this notice and she was told, we believe you're here illegally. If you request a hearing, you'll be detained. In the alternative, you may request to return to your country as soon as possible without a hearing.
Right. You're standing in a processing center in the middle of the night. They take your fingerprints. They take your picture. They go, do you want to go home? Sign the piece of paper. Reyes Velasquez spends 2 weeks in jail, gets on a bus and goes.
What should she have done?
Well, in all hands.
You were omniscient. What should she have done?
In perfect hindsight, Your Honor, she should have requested a hearing at that point. She was eligible for cancellation of removal. But she had no ability to contact an attorney, and at that moment, in that moment, she doesn't have right to counsel.
The right to communicate with, upon your request, the officer will provide you with a list of legal organizations that may represent you for free or for a small fee.
Yeah, you can get a list, and you can go sit and wait in the jail cell. It's a carrot stick. I reserve the rest of my time for rebuttal.
It also says that, well, okay, sure, that's fine. Thank you, Mr. Sharma Crawford. Mr. Zanfordino?
Good morning. May it please the Court. Richard Zanfordino for the government. I just want to step out of my prepared text for 1 second. If we're talking about Reyes-Vasquez out of the Eighth Circuit, the board in its one of the published decisions we're discussing today, Aviles-Nava, at page 805 of that decision, characterizes Mr. Reyes-Vasquez as only spending several hours in detention. But there was a two-week absence from the United States. So unless there's a different case that we're thinking of, the way the board has characterized it is there was not 2 week jail time in the United States. It was 2 weeks that he was gone, came back detained for several hours, and then returned. The board in this case followed its published precedent decisions. There are two of them that were concerned. Following its published precedent decisions, the agency properly concluded that the petitioner in this case left with the threat of removal proceedings being instituted against her. That is what the two published precedent decisions of the board state have to happen. If an alien leaves because they fear being placed into proceedings, that will serve as a break in continuous physical presence.
But if she if she was ordered voluntarily or offered voluntary voluntary departure, she would get a much more elaborate form, wouldn't she?
Pre-hearing voluntary departure, Your Honor?
Well,
there's that's the problem, is that what happens, there is a bargain for exchange here. There are several types of voluntary departure, and this gets to more of the inside baseball type.
Nothing is simple in immigration law. I know that.
We have misdemeanors that get qualified as aggravated felonies. We have voluntary departures that might be returns or that still are departures. But what happens is when she's stopped and arrested by the Border Patrol, they can informally say, we've caught you, you tried to come in illegally, you have to go. And the board has held that does not break your continuous physical presence.
Right.
What the board has said, as the process becomes more formal, and this was the published decision in Ramalez, that as the process becomes more formal and as the threat of deportation proceedings or removal proceedings loom against you, that will break your presence. So then Aviles-Nava came out after this court's decision in Morales and discussed the types of evidence that the agency should look at to decide, well, how much was the threat of deportation proceedings looming? What do we look at, evidence-wise? Those types of evidence include the I-213 record of deportable alien, a thing called an ident printout that contains a photograph and the fingerprint of the alien, photos and fingerprints, or other documents from the DHS that would indicate there had been a more formalized procedure. Here we have all of the things I've listed so far in this particular case, plus the I-216, which indicated that the petitioner had been returned to Mexican immigration officials, and, as Your Honor was holding up, the notice of rights and request for disposition. I'm sorry. That statement, or that form, which was in Spanish and signed by petitioner, stated that she had been arrested because immigration officers believed she was in the United States illegally. It stated that she had a right to a hearing in immigration court. It stated that she could, at that hearing, contest whether or not she could stay in the United States. It said that if she chose to go to the hearing, she could be detained or she could seek a bond release. It stated that in the alternative, you could request to return to your country as soon as possible. It further stated that she had the right to contact an attorney, and if she requested a list of legal representation of advocacy groups, they would provide that to her if she requested it. It also said if she wanted to call, use a telephone to call a lawyer or someone else any time prior to her departure, she could do that. The form, in sum, offered her three choices, two of which involved going to immigration court. The petitioner in this case chose not to go to immigration court and requested to depart as soon as possible. Other than that form, and the form indicating that she had been returned to Mexican immigration officials, all of the evidence in this case matches the board's published precedent decision in Aviles-Nava, which followed the board's precedent decision in Ramalez. What this comes down to is whether or not the board in this case followed its published precedent decisions properly. As we've stated in our brief, the Fifth, Eighth, and Ninth Circuits have all upheld the board's treatment of breaks in continuous physical presence in Ramalez. And this court in Morales noted that it had no quarrel with the Ramallah's rule, but the problem in Morales had been there was no evidence. The alien, there was no evidence produced by the DHS regarding her return. The alien in that case indicated that she was arrested and offered a chance to leave and took it. There was no evidence by the DHS, and this court in Morales said that's not enough. We think actually this goes the other way in terms of the amount of evidence that we have. The form itself, we think, suffices alone as it is, apart from Avila's novice statement of I-213's photographs, fingerprints, and so forth. Again, the case here indicates that the petitioner had three choices, two of which made clear that she could go to immigration court. It was petitioner's choice to avoid going to immigration court proceedings, which follows the board's published precedent decision that the threat of proceedings looming over her were enough to prompt her to request to go back. Unless the court has any further questions.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Zanfordino. Mr. Sharma Crawford, how much time does he have? You have 1 minute.
Your Honor, in sum, to make the point as clear as I can in this muddy area, each of these decisions talks about a formal proceeding. The quote I was reading from Morales was talking about she had not seen an immigration judge, she had not been placed in proceedings. Avila's Nava talks about the formally executed process of a 235 removal at the border, the formal withdrawal of an application for admission. Ramallah talks about the enforcement of an order of deportation. That's our position, is that those are lacking in this case. This is a piece of paper that they sign to get on the bus or to cross back across the bridge.
But all you wanted added, really, would be to say that if I request a hearing before the immigration court, I may have grounds for being allowed to stay in the United States.
I think that's what's missing, Your Honor, yes. I think at this point, when you're at that point in the border and you're stared with the choice of the carrot or the stick, the paper or the doorway back home, that you really have no idea what you have available to you, and that's what's missing from this.
Okay, well, thank you very much.
Thank you.
To both counsel. Next case for argument, United States versus Lowe, Mr. Koenig.